is Deanna. Our guest the last 2 hours of this program is the one and only Clint Richardson. He has a program on RBN Monday through Friday, and that is from 7 to 9 p.m. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com. He is the producer of The Corporation Nation, Lethal Injection, The Story of Vaccination, Kaffir School, School Districts, and The Lottery, another movie, Common Core, Agenda 21, and Global Privatization. Fabulous work. You have such a body of work and have educated so many people on so many things. The first movie that I saw of yours was The Corporation Nation. As soon as I saw that movie, I thought, holy cow, I've got to talk to this gentleman. And so I found you, and here you are.
Well, thank goodness that people pass things around, because, you know, I just kind of posted that thing up there. It was my first little attempt at making my own movie, and fortunately, you know, it just got passed around. It wasn't for sale, and, you know, I had no DVDs to offer or anything. And, yeah, so it was a good experience. I mean, that's the way my blog has been and everything has been. It's just put it out there in the universe, and hopefully the right people will get it. And, you know, what else can you do, huh?
Indeed. Well, you have an article your most recent article. And well, you have several articles that you've done recently, but one that I think is very timely, given what is going on, well, this week in this country, not that this has not occurred many, many times before, is the title of the article is, Can the President Really Make Law? And, well, with executive orders, that's certainly what they've been doing for a good long time.
Yeah, unfortunately. We have this, you know, we have a patriotism, a sense of religion is more what patriotism is, that we want to believe so badly that there's some way to work within this current system to recreate or recapture what the country is supposed to be. Although when I look at history, in the history of this nation, I don't see any time where I say that's the part that I want to go back to. Like, here we had slaves, here we had this, here we had that, here we had the banking takeover, here we had, and I look back and I don't really see the spot where I'd like to go, except maybe the very beginning. But right now, it's so important for people to understand it's a false dichotomy. It's a false dialectic that's being played out in Congress between both Congress and the Treasury and Congress and the President, because basically Congress is they're actors, they're portrayers, they're agents. They are just putting on a stage show.
Liars and thieves.
Yeah, I mean, they're literally professional liars. Yes, that's what they are. That is what a Hollywood actor is. That's what any actor is, especially a politician. And so you have to look at these things in a very reasonable and logical way. If you just step back for a minute and think about it for a minute, and you have to ask yourself questions like, is Congress and the Federal Reserve or the Treasury itself, are they actually in competition? Is Congress and the President of the United States, are they actually in competition? Do they not work for the same company? I mean, really, is Congress not just the board of directors of a big corporation called the United States and with the President? So what you find in all cases, especially with the Federal Reserve, but also with the President, is that Congress, like with the Federal Reserve, Congress will pass a law that says, okay, Fed chairman, you cannot say certain things in Congress. In other words, when the public is watching and we're in congressional session, You gotta stay silent. You gotta withhold information. And by the way, do it in a way that's good for business, good for show business. You know, make it look like Congress's hands are tied and that we can't do anything about the big bad Fed. Right? But if you look, if you actually look, you'll see that Congress created the law that prevents all these different agencies, and there's like hundreds of independent agencies, including the Fed, post office, etc., that are able to withhold things from the public sessions of Congress. They want it that way. You see, you got to understand that that's the game. That's the Hollywood production. So with the president, okay, back in, you know, I've said this till I'm blue in the face, but back in 1933, you had the Act of March 9th, 1933, which is still congressional record, and you can find that it's both in Title 50 under the War and National Defense, which, by the way, is where the Lieber Code is that says we're in martial law, basically, or military rule. And you can find that in 12 U.S. Code, Section 95A, which is actually kind of hard to find, but it's there. So, again, 12 U.S. Code, Section 95A. And it simply says this. Back in 1933, the actions... Okay, this is congressional, remember. This is the Act of March 9th, 1933. The actions, regulations, rules, licenses, orders, which are presidential orders, and proclamations heretofore, hereafter taken, promulgated, made, or issued by the President of the United States or the Secretary of the Treasury since March 4th, 1933, pursuant to Congress... to the authority conferred by the Act of October 6, 1917, as amended, are hereby approved and confirmed. Now, let me say that again. The actions and orders and every other thing that the president wants to do, his whim, are approved, or in other words, pre-approved and confirmed. Okay, what does that mean?
Here's a blank check. Just do whatever you want.
Yes, absolutely. We'll apportion anything to you. It literally means that the president became dictator officially on that day. Now, you had executive orders. For instance, Executive Order Number 1 back in the Civil War when Lincoln declared basically the first essence of military rule with the Civil War. When he started attacking the so-called sovereign states. So, so what this means is really simple. It means that the Congress, through the president, is basically able to do anything they want. It's not a competition because they wrote the law that says everything the president does doesn't need to be confirmed by Congress. We could pre-approve it and pre-confirm it. And then the Congress goes, oh my goodness, that darn president, our hands are tied because he has all these powers and where, and the news comes on and analyzes each side and gives you all these memes and talking points. And the whole time, it really boils down to one very simple thing. All Congress has to do is repeal the power to the president to have emergency powers, war powers. Emergency powers are the same as war powers. If a war is declared, guess what? The doctrine of necessity, which is in the Constitution, is basically the law. The problem is necessity knows no law. So when everybody's saying, hey, what's happening is so unconstitutional, well, that's because the Constitution is basically suspended when it comes to the actions of the president, because everything he does is pre-approved and pre-confirmed.
Exactly. All right, we are going to take a 3-minute break. We will be right back with our guest, Clint Richardson. Welcome back. This is the Diana. Our guest today, the last 2 hours, is Clint Richardson. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com. And during the break, I ran down and checked my bone broth, and it's down there stewing away. All righty. I'm sure you all care about that.
bone broth. Are there fish heads really, in there too?
It's really good for colds and things. So I have this big knuckle bone, you know, that I got from my Amish farmer, and so I threw it in this morning. So I'm stewing it away, or boiling it away, or whatever.
Yeah, very nice.
Okay, getting back to the scoundrels, the thieves, the liars in Congress, and even you were talking about the Federal Reserve. I mean, Congress created it. If they wanted to get rid of the Federal Reserve, it would be gone tomorrow. And eight foreign bankers do not own the Federal Reserve. And we've talked about that before, but that's another just subject altogether. But I always think of that about our conversations about the Federal Reserve. And of course, they always lie. They set up this false dichotomy of left, right, Democrat, Republican, and it's just a stage play.
Well, it's this word that we just heard is such an important word. This word, confirmation. And one of those words that when I found out what it actually means, I was just shocked. You know, because you hear words like confirmation. What does it mean to have something confirmed? Well, mm-hmm. You know, if you start at the top level, you have the federal government, which is basically this piece of paper, a geographical location on the map, you know, that's Washington D.C., and then its jurisdiction that spreads everywhere. And if you actually understand what confirm means, then you understand how all this plays out. So on the top level, you have in the state constitutions, you have each state confirming the U.S. Constitution. What that means is that the United States Constitution is the law of the land. In other words, the states have no power when it comes to overruling federal law. And, of course, that means that we're all equally punishable under the federal law. It's not such a good thing when you consider equality means we all have equal right to be extorted and exacted from under the law, and punished and put in pain and taxed, etc. That's what equality really is. It's kind of this equal enslavement type of thing. So, okay, so that's the first level. So what does that mean? Well, if you look up confirmation or to confirm something, it's defined in all the dictionaries as the same thing. You're confirming a fraud.
Wow.
You're literally confirming something that is not real. You're making it real by confirming it. You are accepting organized crime. There's nothing good about the confirmation process. Okay, what happens? Well, the voters come along and confirm the Senate and the Congress and the President, et cetera, by voting. Mm-hmm. We confirm the fraud. Called representation. Another word for representation, if you look in the 1889 Dictionary of Law by William C. Anderson, the definition of lie is C, representation. And it's a lie. It's a representation of a real thing. So we allow them to basically be a representation or a lie that is supposed to be us. So they are our voice. They are the people. That's the truth of the matter, because they speak for us. What do? Well, the Senate confirms. Well, we vote for the president technically, and then the Electoral College actually elects the president. So we don't actually elect. So there's that. And then everybody else, millions and millions and millions of people in the executive branch of government, which is executive just means military force, because hey, that's what government relies on in order to have power. All throughout history, that'll never change. So the Senate confirms all of the appointments by the president in his cabinet cabinets, because those are unelected officials. So in order for the president to elect these people, they have to be confirmed by the Senate. So the confirmation process, they're confirming a fraud because these are unelected people. How can they have power that's not given by the people? Oh, wait a minute. The Senate is the people. Never mind. Right? So it's the whole thing is just a big scheme. And you see it for what it is. We confirm our local representatives and our judges and everything else. Every time we vote, we're basically legitimizing or confirming what is unlawful, which is the legal realm, basically. So
right.
this is basically what happened back in 1933. The President of the United States and the Secretary of the Treasury, anything they do from now on is hereby approved and confirmed from that date on. And that hasn't changed. That hasn't changed one bit. Now we can read from congressional record all of the comments that were made about what this meant, from different folks. Now, Frank Church and Charles McMathis, issued a joint statement on September 30th, 1933. Excuse me, 1973, when Congress was looking to maybe end this emergency power thing, which tells you they can end it anytime they want.
Sure, absolutely.
Right. So they say, here's what they say. I mean, this is a congressional record. September 30th, 1973, quote, "The president has the power to seize property, organize and control the means of production, seize commodities, assign military forces abroad," which we see all the time without a declaration of war, "call reserve forces amounting to 2.5 million men to duty, institute martial law," and that would be under the Libra Code, "seize and control all means of transportation, regulate all private enterprise, restrict travel, and in a plethora of particular ways, control the lives of all Americans." They go on. I mean, enough should be enough for people to insist, absolutely start insisting and revolting that the fact that we're under military rule, and that means that martial law can be declared. I mean, martial law can only be declared because we're already under military rule. You got a court, you're in a military court. You have to understand, you have to read the Libra Code to understand that, which is also part of Title 50. But most of the laws, they say, in congressional record, most of the laws remain a potential source of virtually unlimited power for a president should he choose to activate them. Well, now, everything we just read, seize commodities, assign military forces, control production, transportation, private enterprise, restrict travel, and your life, those are all executive orders and presidential declarations, proclamations that are on the books. In other words, they're sitting there waiting to be activated whenever the president wants them to, or whenever Congress does. They just tell the president. Right? So they say it is possible that some future president, I wonder who, could exercise the vast authority in an attempt to place the United States under authoritarian rule. While the danger of a dictatorship arising through legal means may seem remote to us today in 1973, recent history records Hitler seizing control through the use of emergency powers provisions contained in the laws of the Weimar Republic. So you have to realize that wasn't just Hitler that did it through the articles. I can't remember what the article was. It's right in the Constitution.
We are going on a break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. All righty, we are back. This is Deanna. Our guest is Clint Richardson. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com. I actually did a comparison between Hitler and Roosevelt, and assuming power can be a good beneficial thing if the person who is assuming power is ethical.
Well, yeah.
And if you give power to somebody like Roosevelt, in fact, in my book, I call him the red in the White House in my third book. And I did this comparison, whereas Hitler used the power, put people back to work, got production going again, did not use it to the benefit of the bankers and the corporations, but rather for the benefit of the people. Whereas Roosevelt sold out to the communists and the corporations, and well, he used it for the benefit of the elite. So,
well, sure.
Big difference.
The whole purpose of this time, you know, in 1933, when this was happening, when this power was given, it was mostly through the banking acts. It was the emergency. See, you have to understand, when you declare an emergency, it's like declaring war. They even define it as the same authority, the same power, the same jurisdiction, the same necessity as war. So you're literally declaring a war against the emergency. So every year you have different presidents declaring different emergencies. For instance, Bush, I mean, the one we all know is that Bush declared an emergency against, well, how does he say it? Terrorism? The terrorists?
Right. The war against terrorism.
Right.
Open-ended.
And so what you find is that executive order will be refreshed every year because the Congress made the rule. I mean, this is how ridiculous this is. I mean, you just go and you can see every year, including Obama, they're going to revamp the executive order every year, around the same date, which is about September 12th, September 13th. And they'll say, yep, the emergency still exists, and therefore I am continuing with the state of national emergency, which basically means that there is a war against the emergency, in this case, terrorism, which is a non sequitur. It doesn't mean anything. It can be used for anything. And so you have to understand if this power of declaring emergencies was taken away, then both Congress and every act that it has created due to these declarations, due to the state of emergency, and the president, all the executive orders and everything else would necessarily also go away. The Patriot Act would have to be repealed. All of the legislation that goes against what the Constitution specifically says would have to go away. People complain all the time, hey, everything that's happening in government seems to be unconstitutional. And that's because I don't think people really fathom what constitutional actually means. Now, the Constitution in and of itself is not the name of what we call the Constitution. It didn't have a name. So when you say constitutional law, that refers to a specific type of law, not our Constitution, not specifically anyway. Mm-hmm. Constitutional is a word. It doesn't mean anything. It's kind of like terrorism. Constitutions have been being created for millennia, okay? The mostly from the Masonic club. The fact they have a book of constitutions that's in Masonry. All the constitutions that have been created. Kings create them. Everybody. The Mayflower Compact was a constitution. Okay, it doesn't mean it what we think it does. I mean, we put a lot of faith and belief and power, and we believe it's a Christian nation. It's not, I assure you, because everything that we do is not Christian. Trust me.
Yeah.
Read your Bible. And so you're what you have is literally a bunch of people out here who just are throwing their hands in the air because they don't know what to do. There's only one issue. Well, I'll say there's two issues. there's this issue, which if this could be reversed, if you could force Congress to actually reverse this national emergency power, this power of declaring the doctrine of necessity, which means that there is no law. It's just like a war. There's no law except the law of war, which is no law at all, really, if you read the Lieber Code. So once that power goes away, once Congress rescinds all of that, none of this all of it has to go away. All of these bad laws that we are all talking about all the time, all the presidential directives and orders, they'll have to go away. Mm-hmm. Because they're all based on this one thing, which is the ability to declare an emergency. Now, this is nothing new. Okay, in France, the Constitution was suspended under the state of siege, a little act in their Constitution. In Great Britain, they have the Defense of the Realms Act, and it allows the monarchy through her, what do they call them, powers, I can't remember what they're called, certain powers that she has that she only exercises when it's necessary. Oh, there's the Doctrine of Necessity, Defense of the Realms Act, you can look it up. They allow the monarchy to spend their subjects' rights. Well, we're subjects, folks. We're subjects to the Constitution. We're subjects to the United States. In Germany, like we talked about with Hitler, nothing new. Every constitution has it. It's constitutional law to have a doctrine of necessity. So he declared, or he invoked Article 48 in the German Constitution. United States, we call it the War Powers. It's the War Powers Act. What does war powers mean? It doesn't mean war against a country. It means war against an emergency. State of war declared on a national emergency. If people could grasp this, if people could just understand that the only reason that all of this happening is because of this one ability to literally suspend the Constitution that's happened in various different nations and countries all around the world, then it's so simple. All these laws would have to go away. And guess what? The Constitution would be actually brought back for what it's worth. And all of these laws, these acts, these statutes, these codes that have been passed under emergency because of the emergency would have to be then recompared to the Constitution. They would have to be judged constitutional or not, which is a really screwed up thing when you actually get to the bottom of it. But all of the things that are so against the concept of what people say is the intent of the United States would literally have to be reconsidered because they were all approved in a time of national emergency since 1933, folks. That includes the Federal Reserve. That includes just about everything. Sure. This is so, so, so important. Now, like you said, Deanna, when Hitler did it, he did it for the benefit of the people. When Roosevelt did it, he did not. And you're absolutely right about that. But the point is that the only reason that the office of president, because remember, the office of president is basically like the office of queen or the office of king or the office of pope. It's called a corporation soul. It's a perpetual soul. They call it S-O-L-E, but it's how you keep an office alive as a person. Mm-hmm. So you have a perpetual office. The man is not necessarily the problem. It's the power of the office. And that power is ultimate power. And as we all know, absolute power will ultimately corrupt. So that's why this power of necessity, this power of war against the emergency, it's supposed to be a temporary state until the war ceases. But if you have presidents declaring over and over and over, not only new declarations. We have a war against the flu. We have a war against the swine flu. We have a war against Cuba.
It isn't just war in the Middle East. It's a war against everything. The war against cancer, the war against drugs. The war against the flu, the war against, there's a new thing that they have. Like whoever had the chicken pox when they were kids.
It's all out there, and they just keep adding it. And every year, guess what? The president reconfirms the fraud by reestablishing as required by congressional law, reestablishing national emergency. Now Congress is going to sit there and go, "Oh, our hands are tied. There's just nothing we can do." And yet the whole power is based on congressional law, which they can change in an instant. Now, final word on that aspect of confirmation. Every time you vote for Congress, you are confirming this fraud.
Right. Okay. We have a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. And we'll be right back. The last 2 hours today is Clint Richardson. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com. And somebody in the chat room also mentioned what they mentioned. Well, we talked about shingles and we talked about, well, the Ebola. I mean, there's all kinds of emergency things, emergency issues that they say, oh, we got to send 300,000 or 3,000 troops over to wherever so they can help with Ebola. We got to do this and that. And literally, Roosevelt, a scoundrel, a dictator, a red, literally changed the whole structure of the government. And it hasn't been back to pre-Roosevelt days since.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. I just noticed I have an infection of shingles on my roof. Therefore, there must be an emergency. Yeah, everybody. I notice it's spreading around the neighborhood. In fact, every house seems to have shingles.
But my gosh!
It's pandemic. residential real estate speaking, that is. But no, it's literally the power for the president to declare an undeclared war. Every time we go mm-hmm. into a country, we're doing so through basically it's a CIA operation, as was Vietnam. I mean, I've talked to several vets, including my own father, who got an award for being in Vietnam as a bomber. He was a navigator, and his award, I looked it up because I was so curious. His little patch was because it was a presidential award for being basically a soldier of the president. It had nothing to do with anything lawful. It was purely his whole, and I've spoken to other people who either know or don't know. There's Oliver North, who we know was working for the CIA.
Oh, he's Oliver North.
It's patently ridiculous when you think about it. So it's literally the power to declare war without declaring war through Congress. Congress doesn't mind. This is all an equal kind of thing. There is no separation of powers under doctrine of necessity. There's no separation of powers under the doctrine when you have military courts that have replaced everything. I mean, the Libra Code is very specific in its first article. The presence of the military in every state, folks, that's not there to protect you. It's there to guard you. It's there to get you when you become uncivil, when you stop following the civil law, when you stop, when you realize the whole thing is a game pretending. It's no different, really. Deanna, if you think about it, it's no different than any religion in history that, including Christianity, when they turned Christianity into a legal status, in other words, made it a falsehood, they basically, well, hey, let's include Christmas. Let's include all the pagan traditions and holidays that have to do with, so that we can basically indoctrinate all the pagans into quote unquote this false dichotomy of Christianity, and then completely go against the Bible in every way, shape, and form through the corporate church. So we celebrate this pagan holiday. I mean, people, I'm like, I passed this house today and last night, and it had, I don't know, 6 different colored light lit trees and all these different lights and Santa Claus, and I said, hey, look at there. Doesn't that remind you of the little baby Jesus?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like, what the hell is going on here? What are you people doing putting these lights in, taking up electricity? What are you celebrating anymore? It's just, it's nuts. So, this is no different.
It's also very profitable. It's a very profitable. Well, yeah. And Halloween has become the same thing.
Absolutely.
It almost is competitive with Christmas as to the decorations and how much money it brings into the corporations. you have to ask yourself, what are you doing? What are we doing? What are they doing?
I don't understand. I really don't. Let me just give you an example. Article 3. Folks, look up the Libra Code, please, and read it. It's going to amaze you because you have to realize you're under it. I mean, this is the rules of war written by a Jew, of course. Francis Lieber or something like that. But martial law, Article 3, martial law in a hostile country. Hey, guess what, folks? States are countries. So there's 50 states with military bases guarding each state. And what does it say in Article 1? The presence of a hostile army proclaims its martial law. You're permanently under it. It's not coming. Globalism is already here. It's like everything's already here, and we're still talking about it coming. Article 3 says martial law in a hostile country consists in the suspension by the occupying military authority, which is the United States, under doctrine of emergency, of the criminal and civil law and of domestic administration and government in the occupied place or territory, and in the substitution of military rule and force for the same, as well as in the dictation of general laws as far as military necessity requires this suspension, substitution, or dictation. It says the commander of the forces may, okay, so the president, the commander of the forces, that's the president, may proclaim that the administration of all civil and penal law shall continue either wholly in part, as in times of quote-unquote peace, and I've now proven that war is actually peace, it's just cessation of hostility, it's still a military occupation, unless otherwise ordered by the military authority. So basically what the Libra Code says is that we're going to suspend all law, we're going to replace it with military authority, and then we're going to reinstate that old law under a new, I mean, it's going to look exactly the same, but it's going to be different. It's going to be militarily run. So people, you know, they think, oh, we're at peace when actually we're at war with our own government. It's really an amazing, amazing notion when you get into this and you actually start seeing it for what it is. It's quite frightening. Article 6. All civil and penal law shall continue to take its usual course in the enemies, that's us. If you read the Trading with the Enemies Act, we are all the potential enemies of the United States now. They changed that. Congress did. So all civil and penal law shall continue to take its usual course in the enemies, places, and territories under martial law unless interrupted or stopped by an order of the occupying military power, which is the United States, into the states. But all the functions of the hostile government, legislative, executive, or administrative, whether of a general, provincial, or local character, cease under martial law or continue only with the sanction or, if deemed necessary, the participation of the occupier or invader. In other words, the whole thing, this whole government that we have right now that we physically see, the reason why it seems like it's operating completely out of any structure, why crime is rampant, why everything seems to be a lie that comes out of these people's mouth, is because they are literally a fake or de facto government, meaning completely unlawful, completely illegitimate. And the only way that this is going to stop is if this power of emergency and necessity is completely abolished. That's the only way that we're ever gonna reclaim or reestate or do anything that has to do with that quote-unquote de jure notion of government, which means lawful, respecting of the natural rights of men, inherent rights, etc., etc., etc. Until then, there is only one thing people need to know, and that is that we are a patient of the United States. That is what peace is.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thanks so much for cheering us up.
I want people to get mad. I want you to go out your window and yell. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
And I think a lot of us are there. We are there, and we look at what's going on, particularly with this immigration thing. You know, you have the Republicans saying, oh, they're talking about impeachment and they're talking about all kinds of stuff. They're not going to do anything. This immigration situation has been going on since 1965, and it is deliberate. It doesn't matter who's in charge of the Senate, who's in charge of the House. It's a done deal. All righty, we are going to take our top of the hour break. We'll be back at 6 minutes after the hour, so stay with us. Is Clint Richardson. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com, and blogger is spelled with one G, and thecorporationnation.com. We were talking about a number of things before the break, and we were deciding that we were mad. We've had enough. We're not going to take it anymore, and so...
Original comment too. I never heard that.
Anymore. Sure, sure. I saw that movie.
Well, we really need to network. You know, we need to network.
Yes, we do.
Well, okay. You know what? I've been thinking about this actually, and you know, you start examining how Congress works, and they do this with everything, and they are the most pathetic bunch. They are not men. Well, they're not acting as men. They're acting as persons. They're acting with flattering titles.
Criminals.
And we all respect,
they're just
we
a
all
bunch
respect
of criminals.
The persons. See, what does the Bible say? Never respect persons. And that's what we're doing. We're giving them, we're confirming them, and giving them their power. So what do? They do this with everything, in case you don't notice, but including the banking system. Oh, our hands are tied. So they allow the Treasury and the President, the Secretary of the Treasury and the President, to make their own law, based their own rules, their own regulations, their own this. And they pre-confirm and pre-authorize it. So what do? Enter the big, massive propaganda machine.
Support the troops.
Boy, if we didn't support the troops, they'd have nothing. They would have no power whatsoever to enforce anything they do. That is what government is, sheer force. That's why the responsibility of the militia is to protect the people from the government, and that's why they got rid of the militia. So if you think about this for a moment, what do? You see it all the time, all this propaganda, support the troops, don't support the war. Not that there is actually a war, it's the war against the emergency, but support the troops. This is the biggest fallacy that you can possibly think. What are they doing actually? They're saying, well, gosh, our hands are tied here. President wants to go, you know, destroy and demolish a country again. And it's up to us. You know, we have to fund the military. We have to give money. We have to create what's called appropriations. Now, appropriations, what does that mean? That means they're creating money. They're creating debt. So they create debt today. So your taxpayer money is already spent. There is no incoming taxpayer money. All the new taxpayer money is debt. It's immediately paid to past appropriations. So anything that Congress appropriates today, including funding the military and funding all of the president's executive orders and the, you know, every branch of everything, all of that is debt that's being added to any appropriation is debt being added to the national debt. And so what is their cry? Oh, well, gosh, we have to support the troops. We have to fund these military men and their families. We have to see, they're playing on everybody's emotions. They're using appeals to pity and appeals to patriotism and appeals to this and appeals to authority and appeals to this, all these different fallacies in order to justify the fact that they gave the president carte blanche to do anything the hell he wants. And so what are they doing? They're pulling on the people's heartstrings. Oh, well, gosh, we have to fund. What's the easiest way to prevent all this? All they have to do, well, I mean, they could take away the status of emergency. Well, all they really have to do is stop funding everything the president does. So here you see the complicity again. Don't make any mistake. Everything that the president does, every it has to be refunded every year in the, well, I don't know if it's every year for appropriations, but it has to be reconfirmed by Congress each session that they do appropriations. So there is no competition in reality, but in the media, in the stage play that we all see, it seems like they've got their hands to, oh, well, yeah, I guess we can't blame them for funding such atrocities because, you know, it's all a stage play. And as soon as we see through the BS, then we can actually, you know, really see what's happening and maybe make a change.
Right. And the other thing, too, with the military, whenever I see, like a wounded warrior, they have these wounded warrior commercials, and we are supposed to, and they have these people on that, you know, they don't, they're not able to walk, not able to stand up without their daughter's help, and we
pulling on the heartstrings.
Exactly. Meanwhile, the VA is passing out all these psych drugs, and literally with each war, not only is the army and all the military killing people, destroying the infrastructure of other countries. The warfare, because of the vaccines that the military receives, and because of the psych drugs that the military receives, they are literally destroying the youth and the strength of this country. So that when they do come back, and they figure out that they've been duped into fighting a foreign enemy, where in fact the enemy is right here in Washington, D.C., that they are now not unable to do anything about it because of the situation that they're in. Look at the health of some of the people who have been in Vietnam, in the first Gulf War, in the second Gulf War, or the people have committed suicide.
Well, yeah, suicide seems to be a sight of daytime television. You know, I see also, I always wonder, like, why are people putting the connections here? Every single drug seems to say, caution, this may raise your cholesterol levels. Well, wait a minute. How does a drug raise my, I thought it was from bad eating. I thought it was from eating animal fats. Well, no, it turns out that actually the reason everybody's cholesterol is the effect of something that's natural in the body. Bad cholesterol and good cholesterol. There's no such thing as bad cholesterol. In fact, we've discovered that, it's that bad cholesterol. The reason they want to get rid of it in people's bodies is because it's the one thing that prevents all these dementias that they've created, all these prion diseases. LDL is one of the best things you can have in your body. Oh, but don't listen, that's not pharmaceutically or medically sound advice. Oh, okay.
Sure.
Well, yeah, I've got patents and studies that disagree with that, from their sources. So, actually, if you listen to those drug commercials and they say, well, it may cause suicidal thoughts, or it may cause cholesterol, it may cause heart disease. Why aren't people going, well, wait a minute. Obviously, that means that these drugs are causing all of these diseases, not what they tell us, is causing it. So I don't know. It's just crazy. But what they've done, Deanna, is, you know, these are the things I've been really examining the language, and I've been examining the etymology of words more than ever, because you figure out that the whole thing is based on the legal language, and we speak in a vernacular that sounds the same as the legal language, but it's completely opposite. It's, it's like, if you take the word live or live, well, what is the opposite of live? If you look in a mirror, it spells evil. So anytime anytime you're acting as a citizen, anytime you're acting in this, fictional creation of government, you're literally acting in evil. It's the opposite of being alive. You're in a dead pledge. You're in, and these words are amazing. You know,
yes.
Oh, I hear the music.
All righty. We will be back in 3 minutes. Stay with us. Welcome Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest is Clint Richardson. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com. And why don't we open the phone lines in case anybody has a question or comment. You're free to call in at 843. Alrighty, and we were talking about, we're talking about vaccines, we're talking about medications, and it's like, who would dream of developing a chickenpox vaccine that could possibly kill you when nobody's ever died from the chickenpox, and parents are saying, oh yes, yes, we gotta get all those vaccines. They're not thinking. If they read the ingredients, which are readily available at the CDC and some of the vaccine makers also make those ingredients available. Why aren't they reading? Is it okay to inject live viruses into your kid?
Well,
people wake up.
We talked about, we had a really great show. I had a really great show on, National Geographic this month. Should still be out there. The front cover of National Geographic is real zombies. It's got a picture of a ladybug that's basically turned into a zombie to host a wasp egg. It's Real Zombies, The Strange Science of the Living Dead. And in it, it says that, you know, in order for you to have a parasite or any type of thing that literally changes your behavior, alters your behavior, alters your DNA, your RNA switches, your epigenome, whatever, you have to be stung. So it's the story of all these bugs in nature, ants and everything else, that literally get they're stung. All right. So something literally is injected into their body, bypassing their natural, you know, if they eat something, it's not going to happen. So All these different bugs, insects, animals, rats, you know, that get a parasite and then go directly to a cat so that the cat kills the rat. I mean, it's literally about how when you're stung with something that it can alter your personality. In other words, turning you into a zombie to do the bidding of a parasite or a fungus or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So if you compare that to the one instance where humans actually get sick, where humans actually get something injected into them, it's only through the medical profession, and it's only through the concept of vaccination or other injectable, like blood-type products, right? I mean, that's when we are stung by the parasite. That is when we are stung by these vampires who inject things that literally change our DNA structure, changes our epigenome, which is our gene expression, literally turning switches on and off. That's why we're getting sick. We're getting stung, people.
And they are putting the DNA of pigs, horses, cows, aborted fetal tissue into these vaccines.
And that's important. You know, that's how I ended my documentary when I did the vaccine documentary, which was Lethal Injection. Well, that is what actually led me to discovering prions and all these other things that, you know, what's happening when you inject these, bovine serum into your body that is otherwise known as mad cow disease. What happens when you inject scrappy into your body, which is otherwise known as can't remember what that's called, chronic wasting disease in deer. Well, why do humans have chronic wasting disease from as a symptom of AIDS? Is it a coincidence that we're injecting it into our bodies, you know, pieces of DNA into our bodies that are causing mad cow disease, which is basically dementia, and all these Alzheimer's and everything else? I mean, we've proven through their own research studies and patents that they are the ones causing, through injection, all of the dementias, the cancers, the AIDS. It's all coming from vaccines. We've now documented this. Patrick Jordan is, and I have been doing this just constantly now. But I want to read this. I've been asking, and anybody that can do this, please contact me. If anybody has has an autistic child or knows someone that does, please, for my sake, because I'm doing a little personal study, because, of course, no one funds me, I'm studying, okay, what happens? What happens when you inject aborted fetal tissue that's actually cloned from the original sources that I have in the back of my vaccine? Well, my understanding now is that all this autism happened when we started, the increase in it especially, happened when we started injecting human DNA and proteins, prions, into the human body. For God's sake.
Right after World War II.
Well, here you go. A recent CBS News Investigates article interviews a former senior scientist at a pharmaceutical firm who discusses the increase in autism incidences corresponding with the introduction of human DNA to the MMR, the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, and suggests the two could be linked. He says also that an additional increased spike in autism occurred in 1995 when the chickenpox vaccine was grown in human fetal tissue. Now, people, you have to be nuts, not only for moral reasons, but if you're injecting human DNA that came from a different blood type than you, your body is going to have some serious, serious problems.
Exactly. Peanut allergy. Sure. I mean, all these kids have peanut allergy because they started putting peanut oil in penicillin after World War II and in certain vaccines.
And all that does is create an immune response in your body that eventually gets worse and worse and worse. So it's horrible. But the FDA came out and said that they're really concerned about the safety of medical products, including vaccines, of course, derived from human blood and the risk of viral and prion disease transmission. Now, I've shown in triplicate now that the prions are the cause of all these diseases, or they're the causal agent. In other words, when your prions, when your protein structure around your cells, which we call prions, when those get harmed or malformed, they can no longer protect the cell from cancer or from disease or pathogens or whatever. And also, they interrupt the cell process of your body calling for basically your body sends a protein to your bone marrow, which activates the immune system against whatever it is that the cell is calling for help for through the protein. And so the prion comes along, attaches to the little cell phone protein and disrupts it. It can't reach. So you've got a bunch of people with AIDS, the symptoms of AIDS, that simply can't, their body can't call up the proper defense system, their immune system, because they have vaccines that have, or other types of blood products, hemophilia products, that have literally been injected or stung into them by these nurses who have absolutely no clue what they're doing. And and you have this massive disease going on
that is very profitable for the pharmaceutical industry.
It is profitable, and they know it's happening. They're very aware of it. In fact, of course, when they're studying these things, it's not to cure any disease. It's to profit or patent it.
Sure.
To create new ones so that they can be the only ones to distribute it and then find the cure, the amazing cure. We live in such a screwed up society, and it's mostly because people aren't using their logic and their reason about these things, you know?
Exactly. All righty. We've got a 3-minute break, and when we come back, we'll accept a phone call from Bob in Florida. Be right back. All righty. We are back. Our guest today is Clint Richardson. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com and The Corporation Nation. And we do have Bob in Florida. Bob, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much. I'm enjoying this discussion. When my son was born a couple years ago now, they continued. We've had planned for a home birth, but, stuff went wrong, and we had to fall back on the hospital. And that's what the hospitals should be there for the most part. Catastrophic issues. Everything else I wouldn't hold my breath for a moment thinking they might be able to help. But this doctor, Clint and Dan, he really, truly believed that my son needed the hepatitis B vaccination, the hepatitis C. And I kept saying to the guy, looking at him like he had 15 different heads, and he probably thought the same of me with all of his medical indoctrination. I kept saying to the guy, do you think my son's been in the womb, sleeping with multiple women, shooting up heroin? Do you really think that's the case? And of course, the doctor had no rebuttal to that. But what you were bringing up as far as the genetic component here, and we do know that there is fetal DNA contained in the vaccinations. This isn't Clint being hyperbolic. This is indeed the case. Something that I was thinking of was the increase of autism amongst boys. And there obviously is a different set of chromosomes at hand with boys. And they try to blame it on the fact that, well, boys, as far as autism go, have a higher chance of being autistic for other reasons. But I think this DNA component may indeed factor into this equation as far as boys having a pretty large increase.
I believe that wholeheartedly, because it's really the only thing that makes this. Now, there's a lot of talk about mercury, and mercury is certainly shown to harm, you know, the brain growth of whatchamacallits. I can't remember what they're called, but the little snail, you know, things that come out. But I wholeheartedly believe, and this apparently is not just my own opinion. Like I said, the FDA has come out. The National Network for Immunization Information published human protein DNA in the vaccines. Why some vaccines are grown in cell cultures that are, you know, why are we using human fetals? The problem is, man, they're going to start using. They want to do all vaccines in this. It's just right. A matter of ethical and moral issues that have to be overcome. But that their goal, according to their little Congress sessions, is that they want to go to what's called human diploid. They use human diploid because it sounds better than aborted fetal tissue, right? I mean, it's just disgusting.
Oh, it sounds much better. It makes me sleep at night knowing that it's that instead of fetal tissue. Clint, one more thing, and this is important because I want to share this with the listeners. No vaccine is an acceptable vaccine. And this came up most recently when a good friend of mine asked me, what if tetanus becomes an issue? What if your son steps on a rusty nail and tetanus becomes an issue? You know, tetanus is very deadly, and obviously there's a huge focus on fear. Well, folks, there's more to that equation, and I urge you all to look up the tetanus shot and what really is at hand with that. Same thing with polio, that we were not saved from polio because of the miracle vaccination. All of these myths that vaccinations were our savior and are our savior are easily debunked and looked at.
Well, you know what's crazy is that they're debunked by looking at congressional record. You have Salk blaming Sabin, and you have Sabin blaming Salk. You know, one created the sugar cube, one created the live or dead vaccine. I can't remember which one. And they're both blaming each other in congressional record for the outbreak of polio.
That's right. That's exactly right.
I mean, it's
And it usually is with so many things. It's right in front of our faces. And we can thank GlaxoSmithKline for their help poisoning the children of our world today, and Bill Gates and all the others propagating the vaccination fraud and the vaccination death trap. But, Clint, I just wanted to throw one other plug out there. I'm looking forward to your talk at the Freer Mind Conference in Philadelphia, and I hope Deanna joins us as well.
This is Tuscan.
Who else do you think it is, man?
Let's really? Hi, how are you?
Hi, Deanna. Hi. Yeah, so I want to include you guys in the Free Your Mind Conference. Clint's already going to be a speaker. We'd love for you to come out and bring some of your books as well, Deanna. And we definitely appreciate what you guys are doing, all right?
Oh, well, thank you. Send me an email.
Okay, will do. Take care, guys. I'm enjoying the show.
Okay, right, thank you.
Oh, yeah. But I was going to plug it, dude. But, Bob, on behalf of his partners, including Mark Passio, who's also a host here. Yeah, they're having that free. It's like the third or fourth year of the Free Your Mind Conference. It's in Philadelphia. It's in April, and it's freeyourmindconference.com, I believe. So I think they just started selling tickets, but I'm going to be there, and I'm hoping to have my own book done by that time. Hopefully, we'll see. And then, if anybody wants to just be, without even go to the conference, just meet up, whatever. I've kind of been in my basement so long now that I'm like, gosh, I'd actually like to meet some of these people that I talk to.
Oh, indeed. Absolutely. Yes, we make so many good friends on the internet. And it's amazing. Sometimes you can be closer to the people that you meet and have commonality on the internet than with people, well, for instance, in your family who think you're just absolutely crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know, I want to say a few things about the caller. He said he tried to have a home birth. Well, first mm-hmm. of all, you don't have a birth at home. Your baby is born at home. You see, born literally means, okay, that's referring to the actual, act of being born. All right.
Mm-hmm.
When we say born again, that actually means giving up all of this fiction, legal fiction, and becoming alive again and not being dead, as a citizen or a person. All right. So when you say the word birth, that is a legal term. That is only a legal term, and it means delivery. You go to the delivery ward. Okay. This is the kind of stuff that I'm pointing out in my book. Okay, you're delivered from the womb. Another word for womb is matrix. Matrix actually means womb. It also means the first actual legal document that's produced for which all other copies are made. So you want to know how you're put into the matrix? You're birthed, which means delivery, which in Dictionary of Law of 1889 means abandoned. If you abandon your baby, you're relinquishing it, you're surrendering it, you're disclaiming it, you're deserting it, you're forsaking it, you're giving up wholly your child. Now, a baby is a natural word. A child is a legal term. A woman is actually a legal term. There is no such thing as a woman in nature, right? So you take upon yourself as a woman or a human or a black African-American or any race or any type of status in the legal fiction. It's all artificial. It's all fake. Okay, so when you have your baby in a hospital, everybody wonders why they're so adamant about getting a name so that they can attach that to the birth certificate, which is the beginning of your straw man.
Or your social security.
Person.
They want to issue social security numbers.
Right. So they want to give a surname, because the surname, the only way that government can control your child, can enfranchise it into the corporation. Literally, that's what citizenship is denizenship or enfranchisement, is if you give your baby a last name, a first and a last name. That is your Christian given name, your first name, and your surname, which is the legal fiction name, which actually is basically puts you, it takes you out of the realm of God or nature and puts you into the legal fiction. In other words, it creates mm-hmm. a bond and a suretyship, and you have a banknote that's called a birth certificate or a certificate of life birth. So you got to understand that birth means abandon. Okay. That is so important for you to understand, because what happens if you go and pull up your own birth certificate, you'll see that your mother was the mother was the informant. Oh,
yes, that is true.
Yeah. So what does that mean? That means she informed on you like a criminal. I mean, without knowing it, she delivered you. In other words, abandoned you to the state. And I've got all kinds of court records and opinion that show that the state is the owner of the child, or the owner of the name and the estate of man, which is just the form of man, not the substance. So this is the importance of all these words, yield and surrender and delivery and birth. See, that's where we all fall prey or victim to this system, because they're literally taking our children without even knowing.
Oh, exactly. All righty. We'll be right back. And when we come back, we'll take a phone call from Sherry in Kansas. Be right back. is Clint Richardson. His website is realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com. And we do have Sherry from Kansas. Sherry, your question or comment.
Hi, Deanna. Hi, Clint.
Hi.
Hello.
I hope Bob's still listening, and also anybody else who's concerned about tetanus. Dr. John Ray Christopher, he used plantain, and I'm not talking about the banana, banana-like plant. I'm talking about a weed called plantain, and it's really quite common. I don't know that it grows in a desert area, but it grows just about everywhere. It's a detoxifier, but one of the things he used it for was tetanus and blood poisoning. And you can actually make it into a salve so you can have it through the winter. And then I had a question for Clint. Clint, now, you say that the mother is the informant, and I do believe I've seen that on a birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
So say I want to, before I die, I want to undo what I did to my son. Do you know how I would go about that?
Well, we've been sort of working on that. And we've been working on that for quite some time, because I'm the type of person that wants to do it as well, but I don't want to do it before I'm ready. I want to make sure that the steps that I take to vacate my person, which is the artificial fiction, I want to make sure that I do it correctly. And so for people, you know, I every once in a while I'll get the thought that the only way that we're ever going to free ourselves is to free our children by never assigning them with any name, surname, or number, or anything else, birth certificate, etc. And a lot of people are doing that now, and I'm very happy to hear that. They're not vaccinating their children. So you have these literally, if you will, natural in the real sense of the word, not the legal sense, children. I don't even look to say children anymore. Little people that are walking around, you know. And so I'm very happy to hear that. And sometimes I think that's the only way we're ever going to free ourselves is to make sure that our children are free from the get-go. If they want to join later, they can, because that's the quote inherent right of citizens. So when it comes to the birth certificate, if you go to Black's Law Dictionary, I think it's the first edition, it might be the second or the fourth, there's a little thing in there called Pleading the Baby Act. Now, no one can have a contract placed upon them as a child, before the age of consent. So the Pleading the Baby Act is sort of a vulgar term for a statute of limitations act that says, look, no one can be held to a contract of any kind that is done before their age of consent. Now, whether the parent can plead the Baby Act, or it has to be the person, quote unquote, the man that's the surety or straw man of the person, I haven't figured that out yet. But as soon as we do, and unfortunately, really, what this boils down to is. I never thought that I'd become an advocate, literally, for the Bible. I like so many people out there, I attach corporate religion and the Bible as if they're the same thing. It turns out they're just like nature and fiction. They're complete opposites. Corporate religions are absolutely against the Bible. And I was shocked when I actually found that out. I even went to church with my mother when I was in town and pointed in the Bible. I said, look, we're about to pray, and here it says never pray in out loud in groups, you know. It was and she just looked at me and smiled, and it was funny. But what I'm basically going to tell you here might sound strange if you haven't read or at least understand some of the concepts of the Bible, but there's one maxim that holds fit here: change your God and you change your life, which means you literally have to stop pretending that government is the magistrate or God. Magistrate and God mean the same thing. And the president, the judges, the Congress, They're all, the governors are all magistrates or gods. They literally claim the authority of God to rule over us. And the reason they do that is because we voluntarily consent to all of this stuff that we're talking about, the birth certificate, the driver's license, all of these contracts. That's what volunteerism is, unfortunately. It's just the fact that we continue to participate under these false names, these idols, these all these, you know, the Bible's basically, I call it now the anti-fiction. It's how to stay out of fiction. The Bible is not about God. It's about the fall of man into fiction. And if you understand some of the concepts in there, then you'll be on the right way. Now, as soon as we figure this out, I mean, I'm sorry to say that I understand how we all get into this situation, but I don't understand quite yet how we get out. There are several things you can do. You can get rid of your social security card. You can get rid of your driver's license. You just ask and they'll give you the form to sever your driver's license. So a lot of things you can do in that area. However, to literally separate your vessel, which is your body, from the fictional surety or bond that is created, I'm not sure. I got to be honest, at this point, I don't see how to do that other than to stop participating and stop acting as the number or the name. So I don't want to give you any false information in that realm, but I think that we are, I think that my friend Daniel up in Canada is very close to breaking through and really understanding this. So hopefully I'll have an answer for you at some point in the future.
Well, I wonder if you can just rescind and revoke your signature if you sign the birth certificate.
That's why I said it has to do with the statute of limitations, because everything is based on that birth certificate. They call, let me read you the definition of Matrix, okay? The movie The Matrix is literally a mirror image of the real, well, so the fictional world that we live in. Matrix mean, in civil law, the matrix means the protocol or first draft of a legal instrument, which is your birth certificate. That's the first thing that's created or creates you in the fiction. And from that, all copies must be taken. Okay, so it all boils down to the birth certificate. We know that. We know that's where the surname is created, which is the government name. Surname is a very bad word. They also call the matrix the womb or a place where anything is generated or formed. So when you inform, you're literally forming a fictional character that we act as straw man or bond and surety to. Okay, so the Pleading the Baby Act literally translates to, hey, everything that has happened in my life was done in fraud. I've been confirming the fraud, as we discussed earlier, without understanding, without knowledge, without having full disclosure of what I've been doing. Therefore, I'm pleading the Baby Act, which means literally that, hey, this was done when I was a little baby. I had no idea what was happening. The statute of limitations apply to fraud in an unlimited capacity, and therefore I'm getting rid of all ties and all debts and all bonds and all surety and all flattering titles and everything else to this. So that's what the Pleading the Baby Act is, or the statute of limitations. Now, the problem with this, most people don't want this because they're very, very interested in government benefits. They want to be taken care of. They don't want to have responsibility. So if you do this, what we've found is that there's only one way to do this, and that is to, as far as we're concerned, is to introduce the Bible as evidence that your law is God's law or the laws of nature, and you become literally a true follower of the teachings of the Bible, which you could call a Christian, but a Christian is technically a status that's created by government. So you don't want to claim to be anything, really, but You when you go to court,
a natural man, I don't know.
Well, see, and that's natural is also a legal term, so you have to be very careful with all these words. What you end up realizing is that you take the sort of the shut the heck up approach, where you say, what did Jesus do? He shut up. He didn't say anything. All he ever said was, I am, period. Nothing else. You're never making any affirmations, is the point. So that's where we've gotten so far.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Okay, right. Thank you. And thank you, Clint, for being on the program today. We've run out of time.
All right, my love. Love you.
Love you, too. Bye.